Let's see if we can reconvene.
Is this the start of the full committee now, or did we already do that? I was late. Is that the population subcommittee, and this is the full committee, or have we already started the full committee?
Yes.
And I should introduce myself.
Please do.
Yeah, Justine Carr, Steward, Healthcare, outgoing chair of Working Group on HHS Data Access and Use. Actually, where's Vicki?
Vicki's introduced herself.
No, but...
Do we have anyone else on the phone? Do we still have Lynn? Do we have anyone on the phone? Okay.
I'm just saying, if we could send someone out to find Vicki, because some of this will impact in her incoming role.
That was a pretty interesting discussion, guys.
I agree.
I think
folks might still be stunned, but it is amazing and quite a testament to how condensed the committee has been working since we didn't have that time originally set up, and the fact that we just used it, grabbed it, and took advantage of it, quite a testament.
So I'm not sure what we were commenting about over here in the corner a while ago. It's heard it all across the room, but we really have some urgency in setting the date, and we're going to jump all over that. And if necessary, we'll have an executive committee meeting to make choices and get those decisions made. And we'll keep that we'll keep the momentum going. So, Justine, why don't you commence? I'm sure Vicki will be in soon.
Okay, great. Thanks. I had the opportunity to co-moderate a panel with Damon Davis at Datapalooza, and he really did a terrific job in configuring it because it was folks who had used HHS data, kind of like what we were talking about, and then the providers of the data. And it was very rich and very fun, but I could spend hours telling about all the different things, but I thought I might start out by talking about how it's changed and, building on this convergence theme, which just is striking me in every conversation that is going on today. So although I didn't get to use the new app that Vicki gave me last night on how to make slides dance, I did put together some thoughts that just also resonated exactly with what we've been talking about. So it's a little bit of an historical perspective of Datapalooza, but not just Datapalooza. And it starts with, on the left, top-down mandate. And some of us were here when the top-down mandate came from Bush 2, talking about electronic health records. So that preceded Obama, who obviously announced the data liberation and has gone on to say data not only needs to be liberated, but needs to, going forward, to be machine readable. And now what we're seeing as new programs develop, like the insurance exchanges and so on, we're anticipating what is the data we will need as opposed to just taking the data that is the byproduct. So I think that's very exciting. And I was in a reactor panel that Greg and Todd, I think, had upstairs right at the very start of this. And it was memorable because all of the HHS data leads were sitting around the table. And Todd had brought them together to talk about what do you have, what are you doing with it. And it was remarkable as I think back on the body language as well as the concepts, because it was still very early on, and I think everybody was in a different place in understanding what would be the value of it. And some folks, let's say, who had data, like OIG data. They're like, you know, who's going to want this? This, you know, why are we here? That was what I was reading, that it was not this sense of we together will do it, but rather these silos had things. So one would have information about children in this setting. Someone else in a different agency has children in another setting, but those two agencies thought very separately about themselves. Again, my personal observations. So when I think about that moment of Todd being the cheerleader and trying to help, you know, facilitate the vision and having a reactor panel to say, what are you hearing around the table, it was a very interesting beginning. And so when I think also about the first Data Palooza, where I think the winners of the whatever the contest was, it was a card game, I think, about, you know, how many something-somethings in Kansas as compared to Ohio. It was cute, but it was a starter set on using data. Let's go with that. And then what I saw the other day, it just blew my mind. And so I've been struggling of how to put it together, and it's been rather easy because of the discussions that we've had here today. But so, as I said, we started with the mandate on the left, and I think in the beginning, we were the first Data Palooza was all about the apps and the, you know, the execution. You know, it was, I have an app in search of a data element. And so if you look at the top, I've sort of tried to put together how has the approach changed? And I've separated out. An app is just a tool to do something, and the approach is how we think about it. But the thing that I'll talk most about is what defined Data Palooza this time was all the things that I heard were about the customer, the consumer, the community, and what their needs were. It was not an app in search of a data element or in search someone who wants it, but it was a very thoughtful thing. This is a problem that needed to be solved, and here's how we've solved it. So it was remarkable, and just for that, incredible. And I will add also that the keynote speakers were, you know, not as much about, you know, yay, we have data, but really about national health policy and the future and how data is an enabler to get to the future state. So it was exhilarating. But I thought it actually resonates a lot with what we've been talking about yesterday and especially this morning, to say that I think we've been jumbling a lot of things, and I broke out five things that are distinct and discrete, and we ought to be thinking about each one as we think about how we leverage the tremendous potential of the data. And it begins first with the data generator. So that's HHS, a lot of data on the website, over 1,000 data sets. And I think sometimes we've spent a lot of time saying it's the right data, or this and that, but it is data, and it is there, and it is machine-readable. So then the next step, and again, this sort of follows the Data Palooza, which is there are people that can take data and say, well, here's how many doctor's offices there are, and here's how many grocery stores, and here's the rate of obesity, and they can put it together. So it's aggregator. We can put all these things together, and we can display it on a heat map, even better. And I think that was sort of, you know, in the early evolving stages. But I think that what is coming about is really data mining and data integration. So there is so much data, and when I saw the different presentations of people, I began to say, wow, yeah, we do have that, you know, and who knew we had that, and who knew you could use it that way. So I think an emerging critical element are a cohort of people that know how to mine data. And we talked about this actually at the 60th anniversary, about what are the emerging roles and the needs for education and developing of teams. So that data mining expertise, and that leads to data integration, that it's not just I'm going to put everything on a heat map, but I'm going to integrate data around a particular question. And one of the things I just added that I heard today is actually data validators. I think Leslie made the point, just because you can aggregate and put a bunch of data together about a community, it's what's there, but also what's not there. And so there is a role really for big data validation. So I began by saying on the left we have the top-down mandates. On the right, we've had all along, who knew, we've just discovered with our various hearings, there's lots going on in the communities, and folks have been either collecting their own data or making do with it, trying to answer the real-world problems, as we've heard in our roundtables and hearings. And what's been striking to me on the theme of convergence is the coming together, and actually Leah was extraordinarily enlightening and eloquent in helping us understand that there's lots of people that really have been ahead of the curve and coming together. But central to this whole thing is what are we trying to achieve? Who's the customer and what do they want? And that's what struck me the most at this Data Palooza, because they had real world questions. They had used data, even if it isn't exactly timely, it was still valid. And I think sometimes we spend a lot of time in the letter saying, well, you know, 2013 data would be better than 12 and 12 better than 11. And that's all true. And we heard some timeliness issues like blue button, you know, has your claims data real time in the moment. You can look at that. So we're definitely getting to timeliness. But it all came together for me. And the other final point is engagement and collaboration. So, Jim, I was saying when we first had that meeting upstairs on reactor panel on Todd's folks, there was a very siloed kind of body language to the room. And what I'm going to tell you about in a couple of examples is not just engagement with the consumers, but collaboration among agencies that was really, really remarkable and exciting. Okay, now how do I do this? Ah, brilliant. Okay, so again, I said the keynotes were, were about the national health agenda and how this data movement is helping that. But it was not about, you know, look at what we can do with data. So great maturation there. They had some winners. One was Codapalooza, and this was a program, Life Channel, Smart Health Hero. So they were using Medicare data to create an app to discuss with the physician what are those charges and what does that mean, what did you do. So it's, you know, it's not complicated really. It's taking sort of static elements, aggregating them, but having a customer, having a conversation. I didn't see this demo, I just put that out there, is that was the kind of thing. And the important thing is the way they got to this was they had focus group with Medicare patients. They said, what do you need? And that's where it began. So it's useful. It's not the, doesn't have dancing figures jumping around. It just simply helps people understand what this is. Let me go down to the other winner. Health Data Liberator, ProPublica, was awarded recognition for transformation of healthcare policy through data-driven journalism on prescribing practices for Medicare Part D prescriptions. So that was very interesting journalism that pulled together the data from Part D and began looking at trends and frequent prescribers and high prescribers. And I think this is where it, you know, you can put something out there and say, does this look right to you? But not make a judgment on it. As Leslie said, you can't just say, because we just saw this, that in some of the CMS data, the highest charge expense was with an ophthalmology group. And it looked like one ophthalmologist must be doing hourly cataract surgery all day, when in fact it was a whole different story. So there's a great lesson there that you can aggregate the data, but you have to have a collaborator, a handoff. Does this look right to you? Is there another story behind the story? And I think, and so this health ProPublica group ended up, it actually led to the OIG and the Senate and everybody paying closer attention to this. So there's a validator who's going to go in, have a hearing, look into it, find out what's going on. Again, much more sophisticated than what we've heard. So in the middle, I want to just talk about the panel that Damon arranged, because it represented all aspects of this. The first was Purple Binder. Again, simple thing. In Chicago, if you have you're concerned about domestic violence and you're trying to figure out where do I go, what do I do, as Leah was saying, you could Google. And he showed when you Google, you get, you know, you get everything from Amazon to Facebook to whatever. But you don't have what you need in that critical moment when you're ready to make an action. And so what they did simply was take all this information that is available and put it in a very readily searchable. Actually, they used the term purple binder because they had conversed with social workers and case managers who had a purple binder, which is the paper version of what they looked at. So it's very sensible, really. You know, when we think about all the sophistication that we do, simple things are simple, and so we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that making stuff available in a searchable fashion is a tremendous value right there. The second thing was Stride Health, and this I thought was really cool. This is a group that took CMS claims data and created sort of individual profiles. If you're a person with this chronic illness and that, and you take these medications and you smoke, your expenses in aggregate are going to be in this zone, and you're going to need coverage. You know, so how you think about what your deductible is and what your copay is and what your medication is, you might think about it this way. If you're, you know, a 23-year-old, you know, who's a jogger and, you know, works in an office, you need something very different. And so, and you can find these apps on the web and see them. But this again is so timely. It aligns with the national agenda. We want people to have insurance. We want it to be the right insurance. We don't want them overpaying, underpaying. We want them to have what they need. And this is the simple thing. You simply answer questions about yourself and you get a profile right there of what you can do. I asked them actually if they had validated it, and he said he'd speak with me afterwards, and then he got called away. But I think it's a fair question. I'm just giving you the narrative. I have no intention there of anything. But I think it's a very important question, obviously. And I think we have to remind ourselves that after we do this aggregation, we have the ownership of validation. The third thing, one of my favorites, PillBox, pictures of pills. So physicians in the room can think about the PDR. And in the middle, there are these glossy photos of what pills look like. And back before there were so many generics, it was very helpful. If someone said, I have a pink pill, it'd be, oh, is it this one? Yes, perfect. And it was a very, very, very helpful, very important aid. I've learned that to get those pictures in the PDR cost a lot of money, so that it was part of a promotional thing. So while it was a helpful aid, it wasn't just a free service. Over time, as there are genetics, actually there's a multiplicity of pink pills, big ones, little ones, round ones, square ones, so you can't easily say that. And in fact, there isn't a compendium that has pictures of all those pills. So these guys worked together with NLM and the FDA, and they uncovered a whole host of issues getting to data integrity. That should probably be on the list as well, because package inserts are sometimes wrong in the medications. And, you know, when you think about it, you can understand how maybe something like that can happen, but it points to the fact that it's only in using the data that you begin to find the validity, you know, and the what to watch out for and how to improve it. So I think that was a big aha moment, and they had that. And then it turns out that the VA also wanted to do this, and there was an extensive period of time spent about what are the interagency requirements of sharing data. And I guess I can say this. what they ended up doing was bagging all the agencies, making a CD, and walking it over to the VA, where they took that and looked at it, and they have been able to amplify and expand and enrich what was already created. So this is now a remarkable resource. I'm not quite sure where it is, but it just it captured my attention because it's simple, it's sensible, it adds huge value, and they work together. And actually, they work together among agencies against all odds, which I just found so inspiring.
Which data were they exchanging? Pill pictures?
The pictures of the pills and the list of the pills. Yeah, nothing illegal, but it's just a
disclosure for that. Maybe it's an agreement or something.
Yeah, he said it in public. I don't think it was a big deal, but it was just there was paperwork and time frames and there was a time urgency and sometimes simple things are simple. So the next one up, Clinicast uses the NCI SEER data.
That would be harsh.
This one is mind-boggling because the example that he showed was if I am an individual who has lung cancer, if I'm in year one, what's going to happen to me? What's it going to cost? What's it going to get me, for the therapy I get? And if I'm in year five, what's going to happen to me? What's it going to cost? And I don't remember all the details, but I remember in the year five or whatever, it showed it's going to cost a lot and it's going to be spent in ICU time. On average, people in year five with your cancer after this kind of treatment can prolong their life, but much of that time might be in an ICU. And, it reminded me of Paul and the conversations that we've had over the years about personally, what does it mean for me? To tell me my survival is X number of years is one thing. To tell me my survival will be on a vent in an ICU informs my decision-making much more profoundly. So this is just incredible. And then finally, we're going to see this afternoon the health indicators warehouse. So a lot of us, struggle with, with online things and checking about. And I think the health indicators warehouse has responded to people like me who struggle through making things simple. And it's brilliantly redesigned, incredibly simple and intuitive. And I think that, I just want to go back to the previous slide for a second, because as I'm putting down tools, I'm putting indicators down there too, and it's something that Chris just said, because sometimes a lot of people are all asking the same question, and a tool is simply to make that indicator so that all the people that are asking the same thing. So my definition of tools execution is sort of eclectic, but it's there. And then something that Jim Walker said earlier also reminded me that the EHR, we can do all our studies and meta-analyses and focus groups and CMEs and all of that, and it's very hard to get doctors to do things. At our institution, we wanted to align transfusion practice. And we made an educational thing. I think seven people looked at it, but we made decision support in CPOE, and we had a 30% alignment, the improvement in alignment. And so when we think about, we think about the EHR as a repository, or CPOE, I guess, would be the better term, that we can drive practice overnight. And it was just very stunning when I went to see. I was like, this is such a great outcome. Let me see who took the test. Nobody. But that's okay, because that's the old way. We don't need that anymore sometimes. So those are kind of my points, and I think the final thing is, there's emerging data releases. So FDA is now releasing all the adverse actions. I can think of a million pieces of misinformation one could derive from that, but I can also think of a million things that can get better. And when I think about it, I think about the way that, was demonstrated in some of these presentations, that you have all of the folks, in the mix, that it's a collaboration involving the data generators are the FDA, and maybe there's some data aggregation and what are the like things as they put it together. But really the data miners, the integrators, the validators, but what's the question? what is the question we are trying to ask? Because I think that's where it all comes out. And then they also the CMS payment data. And actually, the New York Times did a real quick heat map. Where's the cost a lot? Where's the cost less? For me, this is remarkable. This being my last meeting, as I put up my thumb drive and I saw all these old presentations from, I don't know, years, like 2006, 2007, I got to take a look at them because I think we've been struggling. We've been, you know, on the edges and we think we're onto it now, you know, but, you know, 5 years from now, you'll look at this and say, wow, remember we were so on the edges. But I actually think that the discussion this morning was the best of the best. It's great to have the multiplicity of perspectives around the room and the expertise in a very convergent manner. And just as we said, as Vicki said, we don't want to hold a hearing where people come and tell us, oh, I can't get this. We want a hearing of what can we do. And that was really demonstrated by the incredible engagement today in the discussion. And I one other thing that just caught my attention yesterday, we heard about the NACHA data, and the comment was, there's a ton of really cool stuff here. I hope there's someone, you know, who wants to make sense out of it. And I think that's right, you know, and there is someone. We just got to make sure what's the question we're asking? Who's that, you know, sophisticated data miner who can collaborate and engage with the others and make this happen? So that's others were at the Data Palooza. I know Chris and Leah. I open it up to you to add what your perspectives were.
I think probably with my data nerd hat on, I was really most impressed and excited to hear about OpenFDA. And while it's just the beginning is pretty phenomenal. To think of, we've talked a lot about this macro level of data that we put forward, and this is actually really patient by patient bringing our intelligence and awareness about what's going on. That would be a great presentation to hear from their team, but just thinking about the personal stories of patients who've gone through, family members who've gone through these terrible drug reactions, and knowing that they're having an isolation and the prospect of being able to change that in a very fundamental way that's going to change people's lives and livelihoods is just extraordinary.
It was really, in a way, foreshadowed the whole Celebrex story. It was Kaiser, but everybody else who had their own big data had that same story buried in there. So it shows you can have all of the pharmacy data, but you need the frontline person who says, my patients with this drug seem to be having a high degree of cardiac disease, and then you need someone who can dig down into that and get that story. And the power of that data will be tremendous. So I agree. Phenomenal. Chris?
I thought that Data Palooza this year was very good. I was involved in the community track, and I really felt that it was moderated by Paul Termini at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, Cheryl Wold. They helped organize that. So I really thought, I think in previous years, I didn't see a lot around liberation of data for communities, and I thought they really shored that up well this year. And as I presented in the very short 10 minutes, you know how when you present, you always say, I wish I would have said that, and you didn't? Well, I realized, you know, I really don't thank the federal agencies that make all this data available for us to be able to leverage and build on. And that's one thing. I know it sounds simple, but when you're up there and all these things are going on, it's really thanking, you know, HHS, USDA, the Census Bureau, Bureau of Land Management, all these federal agencies and all the people that are working to make that available. I mean, that's an amazing thing. And that's something in our website. We have metadata where it goes to each agency and what they have. And I don't think that's good enough. I think, you know, put it out there. thank you. Put it out there that don't take this for granted. Put it out there that, like the American Community Survey, that they have to go and fight for trying to continue to do what they do year in and year out. So I think it's really elevating that. And so that was a big aha that I wish I would have said, but that would have taken my full 10 minutes. So, but I really enjoyed the Datapalooza this year.
Yeah. I mean, I would say hear her for HHS because it really was unbelievable how things were changing. There was one other presentation. There were several others, but one other that comes to mind as you say that was the MACPAC was using claims data because they have to answer a question about what happened with expansion of the health insurance, what happens with the kids, and do we still need CHIP or not? And there was a very elegant piecing together of we have this data, and turning it into a family. If a parent has this and the wage is this, but the children is this age, do we have a, it turns out there's a donut hole that you could slip into. But we'd never know that in the old way. You know, we would have opinion or whatever, and this was just very data-driven. And, you know, each presentation, whether it was just take a data and put it in a compendium or whether it was get a sophisticated person who could work together, it was fantastic. Okay, so go around the room.
I don't know if anybody else got a chance to go. Catherine and I got a chance to go.
Oh, yeah.
I have seen the evolution of Datapalooza in the fact that seeing that, it seems like the program itself is a learning system. Because watching what they've done with what they've had over the years, and they don't just stop where they were at 1 year. They just built on that and took perspectives to the point of a shifting mandate. That's what came through for me in the use of non-traditional data. And just invigorating ways, and just to have that all together was exciting.
Let's go around the room. Leslie.
So this is a question for data about Datapalooza, and I wonder if any of you have any sense of this. When I went a few years ago, the overwhelming majority of people presenting there were for-profit entities. There was one little tiny set of sessions where it was public health departments or not-for-profits. And, of course, when we talk about our community data users and toolkits and things like that, we're envisioning public entities or NGOs mostly as our audience. Now, I just did a little play around on my iPhone, and most of the ones you had listed were for profits, including Purple Binder, because their primary business model, as I read their website, is to sell their services to providers. So providers then know what to tell patients. Now, I don't know whether that's good or bad. But my data-driven question is, has the landscape changed? Or is something we really need to be aware of that basically the audience for government data is not the audience we've been looking at, but it's the startup hoping to figure out how to actually gain some kind of traction in the market. But, you know, that I'm really asking that as a data-driven. Has it changed?
That's an excellent question. And I gave my sentiments to Paul at RWJF before accepting to speak there. I gave him the notion that it's very much private sector, industry-oriented. He said, well, that's all the more reason you need to be there. And I think Datapalooza and really bringing in more of that public sector NGO presence, I think we should really work hard to do that rather than spinning off to yet another kind of a forum is to really blend that because it is, I think it's maybe nudging on the right path. It's not there. I think, you know, I thought I was more critical of Datapalooza, but then I went to the HIMSS meeting in Orlando by that space. I think we have a real opportunity, but we need to really work on nudging that.
So what I would say goes back to what Bruce said earlier about generative thinking. I think that, you know, we have a lot of great ideas here, and then we say, I heard more than once today, yesterday, is there funding for it? And I think that, you know, as we think about a partnership, a collaboration with a focus on the national health agenda, I think there's a role for each party, and I think that the stimulating, just, you know, what was presented, and yes, you're absolutely right, it comes to that, but I would say it was kind of invisible. The focus wasn't, it's not what you came away thinking with. You came away with ideas about, wow, this is how we do it. And for me, to understand that there are multiple participants in this, and when we feel frustrated it's not working, it's because we haven't figured out what all these roles are. Let's see, I'll just go around. Leah.
Hi, Leslie. I think that it was principally for a private sector type of audience, but I don't think that is our majority audience. It's not the majority of the people generating the data. It's not the majority of people responsible for implementing the consequences of the data. It's not the majority of people analyzing the data. And that I think it's a wonderful opportunity reminder that as we are growing in this other space, that we make sure we're being inclusive of all of our partners as we move forward, because they bring a lot of richness and to the table. I think Ed Sondick has been a real persistent voice in terms of broadening the participation at Datapalooza. He was there, which was fun to see him. And there were people there with that view, but I think that they weren't necessarily featured at this point, but that's an opportunity, not an opportunity to grow.
And again, I think it gets back to not what's wrong, but what's right, you know, and all the shared learning. I just was so excited. All right, where are we now? Walter.
Yeah, having been attending this since the beginning, it is always amazing to see how much a person with a computer and a lot of data can do. And it's incredible the amount of things that can happen. And in fact, in many cases, the innovation comes from people that are thinking really outside of the box. And they bring those to organizations, even like Kaiser and other large organizations that have a lot of data, and that sometimes our own data is an entangled inside in ways that we don't necessarily have the ability to step back and look at it from a different perspective. So it's very invigorating. But since the very beginning, I always have been concerned about the way in which a specific topic is addressed, and that's privacy. At the very beginning, the very first ones, people, and of course this is all about liberating data, and so people were loosely talking about, oh, but we do protect the data, or, oh, but we do de-identify the data, oh, but we really don't deal with, you know, patient-identified data. And when you started to dig into more details, you could see how easily things begin to break, because, first of all, they didn't really know exactly what they were talking about when they were saying we really de-identify data, we really don't deal with protected health information. And I have seen some increase in the amount of attention being paid to privacy. But I couldn't attend this year, but I was searching, and by searching the word privacy in the agenda, there were only two sessions really that dealt with privacy across the board. And so I'm curious about your sense, since you were there in the ground, about the privacy perspective inside the Datapalooza.
Well, I think that, in fact, the working group on HHS data access and use, that was one of the early things, and we ought to have it on the agenda. It is complicated. And the toolkit, same thing. It's complex. I mean, just even yesterday, talking with Joy Pritz, trying to figure out meaningful use in EHR data, it's unbelievably complicated. So I think I understand why it isn't necessarily a track for the people who pay to come to Datapalooza. But that doesn't mean that it's not important. Datapalooza is really a showcase, a leading indicator of what's going on. But I think the hard work, and I think the work group needs to think about that, how do we manage that? I mean, I think that was a very clear mandate, and I think it's back
Did you see any product related to that? I'm sorry.
Yeah. One of the people who participated the first time this year was one of my favorite Bay Area people, Dr. Kalmar, and she is exuberantly invested in quantified self and wears many, many sensors and compares the data in ways that are very unique to Rachel. But her observation, and it's interesting because there's actually like user meetups and groups in the Bay Area where people come together who are developing in that space, and often led by Dr. Kalma. And privacy comes up a lot. And the balance between this is the data is my product versus it's about the patient is a tension that was amplified that she made a lot of observations about. I think we've got a long way to go, but I think, again, it's an opportunity and more reasons to bring the different communities together, not just, oh, HIPAA, to be a throw-all, catch-all basket, but the reasons why this is private, this is what you can do, and these are some examples of solutions, maybe going back to the solutions, we protected privacy, we got the data back to the patient, to their provider, and yet we'd move forward. One of my favorite hackathons actually was at Kaiser last year, and I had used some of the Kaiser data as a graduate student at Cal, which is great. The data that we were allowed to just use in the building, I think has got so much richness, and I think there's going to be some really great great things coming out of all that. So looking forward to seeing that grow, too.
Okay, so a couple of things. I think next we have Paul, then Raj, then Jim. And I just want to do a time check here. We have time.
And then we'll wrap that up.
We're going to wrap it up after Jim.
No, after Vishka.
Yeah.
I'll put you on the table and then.
Okay. And then you'll introduce the next topic. Okay. Paul.
John, I brought up
John.
So I can go first.
Okay.
Is that all right? I'll just say two quick things. First, in response to Leslie, I totally get what you're saying about the, feeling like the predominant support profit companies. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, right, nobody thinks that the weather channel is a bad thing, but they rely so heavily on NOAA data, et cetera. So, but yeah, I get what you're saying. So, I don't want to totally beat a drum that I feel like I've been pounding on for the last couple of months, but yesterday, Judy Murphy mentioned a robust health data infrastructure, which is a report that we've been talking about a lot recently, and it was the JASON study, and I've been presenting on it a lot recently, and so a lot of this feels similar to some of that discussion. Part of the technical approach that's proposed for people to think about is requiring application programming interfaces for current EHRs to be able to make it available in a much more robust way than currently is the machine-readable data, to the extent that we all appreciate that it's not perfectly, dealt with. But, the discussion about privacy is very key, and the approach that's discussed in that report is patient privacy bundles. Devin McGraw and I have been kind of talking back and forth on the issue, and we both are kind of at a place where we're saying, well, it's one thing to, let other people plug into these things and, be able to have it shoot back and forth, but really if those APIs put the data in the hands of individuals, put your health information in your hands, that represents a really significant shift in, the balance of power, which having the data confers that power, and what you can and can't do with that, because once it's in your hands, who you make it available to is your business. Now, there's all sorts of issues that go along with that. It is also one of my firm beliefs that a key role for the government is to protect people, right? That have a hard time protecting themselves. You see that through a lot of what the federal government does. And I think that having thank God there are folks like Joy who work on stuff like this, because that's a pretty key part that the federal government has to play, is saying what those protections are that people should have and should have access to. So, thanks.
So I just want to congratulate Justine on the tour de force in terms of presenting sort of the life cycle of the Data Palooza. I thought it was very insightful. Also want to acknowledge that even a great splitter can lump.
this is
the lump for us. Oh, boy.
It took me a decade, Paul, but I got it.
So further acknowledgement, I'm going to add a splitting part. One of the interesting things, and you brought it up with the purple binder, is they had to so I'm going to add data supplementer to your approach, because they had to supplement what was in the federal databases to make it more useful. And here's the ad that I saw as you talked. Maybe we need a feedback loop. So the example I was given was in the provider, you're looking for social services, and gosh, one of the things that you'd like to know is what languages are spoken.
Thank you.
So could there be a feedback loop too? Because I think the way these databases get put together is you have these federal contracts, and so you make them submit some data to you. But could you turn around and have them submit these disparity variables, like language, to you, so that they could turn around and come back and feed the system? In other words, if there were a feedback loop back to the data sources, the data sources could actually collect different things because it's in their best interest as well. So that might be an addition to your wonderful book.
Thanks.
Raj. I have several things. First is the data harmonization. I mean, you're collecting all the data, but the data is coming from different sources and different people are using different standards for data. The Mars project, the space project, was the first initial one in 1999. They started that, and so much of data became available. And they found out they were measuring all the standard units in SI units, whereas it was all based on U.S.-based units. So the data that they were using to analyze were different. For platelet counts, there are 68 different parameters for estimating the platelet count. Different people are using different units. For dementia analysis, people were using the same scale in different ways. So I think data harmonization needs to be very focused, and definitions for each term should be split out. And I think the Institute of Medicine convened a recent seminar on PCOS, where patient-centered research, they tried to bring this together and form a data harmonization. Second thing for the data collection is there are different data elements, and they are usually good, but there are sometimes proxies that you need to attach to the data elements, like metadata. For instance, if your patient is using oxygen system, you know that he has COPD or emphysema. So these proxies can be sometimes used for data elements. The third thing is we gather so much data, but we don't know what to do with this data. Analytics have to be developed so that we can utilize these data to make meaningful solutions, like Vicky was suggesting this morning, so that we can move forward with the data that we have, that we already have. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. The last thing I had was data integration into science that is already developed. Data is statistics, and statistics can be a lie. We found that out in so many projects that medicine was involved in. For instance, recently vitamins became a big subject, and a big, large study from U.S. and Australia and U.K. came out and said there's further statistical analysis of vitamins use has to be abandoned and no such studies have to be reported. Until we integrate the data into science and make a meaningful interpretation, I think data gathering by itself will be not fully served.
So I think where we are in this journey is now discovery on the kinds of things that you're saying. And I think that's where data validation is something that we haven't talked about. It's not the data, it's the kind of conclusion validation or assumption validation. And you're right in terms of the definitions. Paul had his moment when he discovered how smoking is measured you know, in the public domain versus in a physician office. That is absolutely true. But I think that the fact that, as we heard yesterday from Jim, as new programs are rolled out, we're thinking at the very start of what is it that we're going to measure. We get a uniform definition, and we have that so that the collectors are collecting to that definition, and we know that data element is going to drive some action that we'll take as we go along. So I guess this is the starting line, not the finish line. And I think that what has changed is that by starting to use the data, we're starting to understand where are the vulnerabilities. And you know, I agree, we have to be cautious to not declare victory. But I do go back to the Celebrex study. There was somebody had an impression that people were having heart attacks that were also on this drug, and turned out to be true. And so, and similarly, I heard at the IOM meeting last year that, you know, the tamoxifen study of how many years should you take tamoxifen post-breast cancer, if you go to the data today, you can demonstrate that with incredible precision, that data, in fact, was there, but it was a question of what's the question I should be asking. Now that the FDA data is available, I think there'll be more opportunities. So I think your observation that there is uncertainty and vulnerability is completely correct, but I think that, the key thing about the focus on the national health agenda, as well as engagement and collaboration with the frontline stakeholders, is what is going to be the turning point. Jim.
Very quickly, just the theme I heard you exemplified really powerfully, everybody's got a computer. Everybody's got access to an ocean of data. What distinguishes for-profits and not-for-profits is whether or not they're capable of understanding some audience, some set of users, and their needs well enough that they can turn that computer and that information into answers to goal-relevant questions. Just one other quick comment. This is a fascinating conversation about the use of data, and it really piggybacks on our earlier conversation. I'm reminded, you know, I get asked, I'm an epidemiologist and a data geek, you know, by my friends, you know, what would I say the data say about mammography for women? You know, we can have data that don't make decisions that are all over the place that you can interpret in many ways. So what's our responsibility as data generators to provide the context and help people understand? How can people understand what to do given conflicting data that we can generate with great ease?
This was actually a question for Larry. Are we going to talk about how the work group? Oh, okay. All right, I'm good.
In the next 2.5 minutes, yes. Go.
Oh,
sorry. 2.5 hours.
Larry, did we change what you just said? Because I thought you wanted a bigger discussion about the working group. But
I just want to quick. We're going to adjourn on time, and let's make the transition to what the working group is going to be doing this afternoon, where it's headed.
All right.
And,
so quick high level lumping.
Yes.
Journey. When the working group was established, actually just 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, it was bringing together these different groups and trying to understand how we could assist HHS. I think just as we've learned a lot at Datapalooza, we've learned a lot in the working group. So as Vicky takes the reins today, I think we've kind of been able to focus on how they can be most effective. Unlike this group who works, hours and hours, the working group is a group of consultants that come from a different array of backgrounds, very rich, and that, when you read the charter, that's the role that they need to play. But we've not been able to, we now have a plan to configure the meeting structure so that the consultants can speak in the moment without coming with too much homework. So Damon Davis is going to be play the role that Jim plays in this meeting, setting the stage. These are the things that we have done. This is what's on the horizon. This is what we're struggling with. And we want to re-energize the group so that we can give immediate, in-the-moment feedback. We can take minutes, and that can be a document. I'm not sure that that letters are going to be the product of this committee as much as the dialogue, the immediate feedback captured in the minutes, things that HHS then may or may not want to do. So I would say that's the predominant thing. Now, today we have a couple of presentations, SAMHSA, and I think the Health Indicators Warehouse we're going to see. Because, again, I think sometimes we jump to, we jump to the apps before we understand what's the raw data. I've seen, the richness of expertise. I think Vicki is brilliantly positioned as the next chair because she dwells in this world, and she has a lot of understanding about this. And so I feel, very, in a way, relieved that you're taking the reins, because I think that's what's needed. And I know a lot about meaningful use, but, I think what your background is going to energize the conversation, and I think it's going to be very exciting.
Vicki, any retorts?
Only that I'm a little speechless, because I have a lot in terms of following Justine, but I think that where the group is positioned is very exciting in terms of what we've talked about, in terms of the next steps, having Damon involved. And I also think for the way in which we're also including standards and privacy and, each of the groups as kind of that's a topic and area that we want to make sure. Again, it's not about the apps. So I think the direction that we're going is very exciting, and I, appreciate the confidence from Justine. So.
Well, and I want to speak to the committee. And, Justine, if you took a page from Chris Fulcher's comments earlier this morning about archetypes, you are your own archetype. We are indebted to you for working with Jim Scanlon and Debbie and others to invent this group, get it started, rummage around, sort of figure out your way, get to a product, and you're now doing an elegant synthesis and transition at the end, and I just want to say thank you very, very much. Do you have any public comments? Anyone on the phone? Okay, well then, Debbie, can you work some of your magic and suggest to us what some of our next steps are?
I don't know, Justine, if you had any final ideas.
Just thank you.
Well, we're not, she's got work to do.
Yeah, I have work to do. But truly, I said this last night. This has been over a decade of my life. It has transformed my life. I have learned so much about, content-wise, as well as working together as a team and keeping our eye on the mark. Each of you is very special to me, and you can invite me back if you want to hear about meaningful use. I can't begin. I'm just processing now how integral this has been to my life, and I just hope that I've made a difference for the country, for the HHS, and for all of you. So thank you for all you've done for me.
I remember just being it was 10 years ago. You're right that. We were looking for new members, and several agencies said, gee, I know this doctor up in Boston who knows a lot about standards and is interested in data and all of this. So we said, all right, that's good. And that's how Justine started, and 8 years on the full committee and 2 years, the last 2 years, with the work group. And just where I, from the department's perspective, I really want to thank you for you really kind of pioneered the work group and got it towards functioning. It's a nice handoff now. And I think we'll make him an emeritus. We can always call on you again. But thank you again from HHS.
Thank you. I just want to clarify, because you may not think I know that much about standards. What happened, the way this came to us, we had a program that was not – that was an inpatient oncology program, IL-2, that was being paid at a DRG rate for the site of disease when the illness the treatment cost more than that. And I was so wedded to this program that I ended up coming down here with Nick Kennedy's guy, Nick. And on the way down, I said, "So, you know, this is great. We're going to get this fixed. What do you think my chances are?" And they said, "Zero to none." I was like, "What?" Like, I took the day off from work. So I was my most passionate, bordering on rabid self, to show that the data tells us this can't happen. And in fact, we got it fixed. So, but I hope it wasn't overstated what my knowledge of ICD was.
No. I came from CMS and others, so.
Thank you. I saw you primed ready to respond, and I had to get some of your notes in. It's going to be a very busy summer for the committee. Just so you'll know, those of you who have been here a while, you know that usually we've gone around the table, and the subcommittee chairs at one point, now co-chairs, were reporting out to each other what you were doing. Well, that hasn't happened in the last couple of meetings because everyone has been in the seat and kind of sees what's going on and is progressing forward, and I think that's an amazing step for just everyone pulling together and you know, being on target. The two action items that were taken this meeting will process next week. As you know, they go to the secretary first and then are posted. We'll work through the action item timing so that we can do a nice introduction to the new secretary with briefing materials, just so she'll know kind of what we're about, our 60th anniversary, and some of our recent reports. So we'll coordinate that so there's a good communication as to who this group is while we're giving her this amazing material. The July, next month is going to be very busy with probably an executive subcommittee call. We'll pull that together in preparation for the September meeting, and we have the July 16th privacy webinar session, and that's going to be very hopefully technologically astute and pull things together for that material in preparation for their upcoming meeting. The action items for fall, and we'll talk about this on executive subcommittee, will probably be two items, one from standards from their amazing meeting from June 9th, is that 10-11? Yes. How many days ago that was? Pulling all of that together, they'll have routine calls and doing that, and then the privacy material for the stewardship. The information was about public comment, and as Larry already requested comment, we're going to incorporate that more and more throughout the meeting itself, and some follow-up items with Jim. Those were the main items that I had with the ACA review committee. We'll follow up on that as well.
And our most immediate actions are is the working group's going to meet this afternoon and the Populations Committee, and everyone's invited to join them tomorrow for are you calling that a workshop? Or?
It is a framework workshop.
A framework workshop. So NCPHS Week in Washington continues tomorrow. If you don't mind, I'd like to run the table, but not to have everyone say what they're thinking the work plan is, but I'd just like to hear everyone's reactions to where we are at this point. Anything you want to say, again, just a sentence or two. A year or so ago, I asked you to do this in three words. So, Ops, why don't you start us off?
Off we go.
Tired, excited, looking ahead.
Needing to get back to work.
Busy and but excited at the same time about what's coming. So, thanks.
More than three words, if you'll permit me. I thought that the benefit of the committee working as a whole was really realized very well at this meeting. I think it's matured. And, I just heard more of us pointing to the need to connect this work with the other work. So I thought that was terrific. It occurred to me that maybe when we talked about a letter to the secretary that kind of introduces the committee, I thought it might be great to convey that sense of congratulations about the impact that the liberation of data is having in that letter, because I think that was a sentiment that probably should be communicated. And those were my two thoughts.
So I thought this was, like Linda, probably the most participatory and collaborative meeting in a long time, and it was super informative for me. I guess my takeaway is that there's a lot to do.
Five words. Laser information people can use.
I thought you were going to say systems, 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 systems.
Eager for October.
Looking forward.
I'm still learning. Contraction can be one word.
Contraction.
Good luck.
Easy for you to say.
I agree.
Time zones and inclusion of practicing nurses and practicing physicians in the committee beyond academic.
Introductory words from my perspective of where I sit, where population health lives at CDC and maybe even HHS. Happy you're here.
Effective committee collaboration, working as a whole.
Excited, very excited, but worried.
We're making real progress.
Still not Mike Fitzmaurice.
The same location, location, location. But three words. Thank you to the committee again. It just amazes me that when you put smart people together, how much you get more than the sum of the parts. Two, thank you for going ahead, taking some of your responsibilities as well. And again, the most productive committee. And again, I want to thank all the members for their contributions.
I want to thank all of you for role modeling civil discourse, something the country needs desperately. And I thought this was a spectacular example of people who do not agree, but who care, and being able to converse and speak with one another. It's a lovely thing. I may have inflicted these on you guys before, but Rebecca Costa, in her book, The Watchman's Rattle, quotes the famous scientist E.O. Wilson as expressing dismay about the future of the human race. And she quotes him as claiming that the problem with the human race is that we have Paleolithic minds, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. And that quote's been going through my mind over and over and over again for the last 3 days. I've also may have inflicted with you my something I have on my wall, which is the stages of project development. And you may have heard these before. You may use them yourselves. But the first stage is wild enthusiasm. The second one is disillusionment. The third one is search for the guilty. The fourth is punishment of the innocent. And the final stage is promotion of the non-participant.
We use that in HHS, too.
And when I look at Justine and that decade that she runs by, I believe that you can see all the stages of project development across that period of time at various stages. And in our different projects, we're at different phases. Exactly, and that's just fine. So I want personal credit for adjourning the meeting 2 minutes ahead of time. And we will be back at 1 o'clock to commence with the working group. Thank you all very, very much.
Thanks to the staff.
How's everything going?